Craig Berg is on the way next. Support for The Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering online degrees in sustainable management, a career for people, planet, and profit from UW-Parkside in partnership with UW Extension. Details are available at uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am so grateful for the lineup of interesting guests that Nan Calvert arranges for us on a monthly basis. And once again, she has invited someone very, very interesting to join us for most of today's morning show. Her name is Mariette Nowak. And she is someone who loves two things that I know Nan Calvert loves very much, and actually a lot of us do, birds and native plants. And in a sense, those two worlds, those two topics come together beautifully in a book that Mariette Nowak wrote some years ago, one of a couple of different books she's written, this one called Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. And this is a book that gives us ideas on what we can plant in our own backyard, literally, in order to attract a wide array of beautiful birds. Mariette Nowak, for a number of years, was director of the Weir Nature Center. As I had mentioned already, author of a couple of books, and very active in the group called Wild Ones, which appreciates the beauty and importance of native plants, and also does a lot to try to eradicate the invasive species that sometimes choke native plants and sort of crowd them off the landscape. Wild Ones helps to make sure that there is a special place for native plants all around us. And so now Mariette Nowak is president of the local chapter of Wild Ones, where she lives in the South Kettle Moraine. And we are really honored to have you on the morning show. Mariette Nowak, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Greg. I'm delighted to be here.
Do you want to say just a word about how you know Nan Calvert or what your connection is?
Sure. Nan Calvert was a naturalist at the Weir Nature Center when I was director there, and she was a wonderful naturalist. She really did a great job of teaching our young people and even our adults and so forth. So I was very happy to see that she's still active in the natural area. I believe she's in a Rivershed group now. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. And again, I appreciate Nan arranging this interview and arranging your visit to the morning show today. So where does all of this interest come from for you? I mean, is this something that you have been deeply interested in from the early part of your life?
Well, yes, I was. I actually wanted to be a naturalist when I was 9 years old, but I didn't know anything about being a naturalist or an ornithologist. I really wanted to be an ornithologist, but I didn't think anybody could earn a living by just watching birds. So anyway, and I lived in Milwaukee and there wasn't much opportunity, so I sort of lost interest. and got into other things until I was married, actually, because my husband and I both love nature. And then we started bird watching and going to national parks and state parks and so forth. And we both just love nature. And right now we have a 2-acre property where we have completely re-landscaped with native plants and just have a little bit of lawn. And we're thrilled with the birds that we're welcoming to our yard with our native plants.
So at what point in your life do you remember becoming even aware of something called native plants and sort of realizing the special role that they play in the world around us?
Actually, I think that was probably in the late 80s, 1980 or so, because I remember we actually had some invasive species at the Ware Nature Center, and we weren't aware of how bad they were. Of course, they were increasing, and you can get to realize that pretty soon. But we didn't even think anything of it. When I first became director in 1980, we even had a postcard with the invasive purple loosestrife on it, because it is a beautiful plant, but it can just ruin natural areas and take over completely and not provide the variety and habitat that native birds need. So that's about it. So then Lori Otto, who was one of the founders of Wild Ones, gave some wonderful talks. She was a very charismatic speaker, and she inspired many of us to start realizing the importance of native plants and the problems with invasives, which are one of the most important reasons for the decline of native species. Hmm. Birds and bugs and insects and everything. So we need our native plants for all of wildlife.
Right. So I guess in a nutshell, the problem is that at least many invasive species do not provide what our indigenous populations of, for instance, birds need in order to survive. Is there any particular reason why invasives can't be eaten by birds or can't be eaten by insects? And maybe there are some that can, but obviously there's an issue here where many invasives do not play that really crucial role in the ecosystem.
That is very important to understand, Greg. Actually, what one of the main problems as far as insects go is that first of all, let me just say that birds and insects and all of wildlife evolved with our native plants, and they evolved to evolved to support the birds and insects, and vice versa. The birds helped distribute the seeds and so forth. And so there was this mutual harmony between wildlife and native plants. But the non-native plants come from other countries, and our wildlife, our birds and insects, aren't adapted to feeding on them necessarily, especially the insects. The insects have evolved enzymes to eat the native plants, but they don't have enzymes to digest the non-native plants. So they will either die if their eggs happen to be laid upon it, or the adult, say butterflies, don't even lay eggs on those non-native plants. They just can't survive on them. So that's one of the main reasons. And then that in turn affects birds, because 90% of our land birds depend on insects to feed their baby birds. So if we want to have reproduction in birds through the years to come, we need to have enough insects to feed those baby birds. And so it's all a cycle and a harmony between the native plants and the insects that feed the baby birds. And as far as fruits, sometimes the birds actually do eat the non-native fruits, but they're not as nourishing. They might eat a lot, but they don't have the proteins and the types of sugars and so forth that the birds need when they eat fruits. So even though they eat them, they're not that healthy. They're like junk food for us.
Wow, interesting. So when it comes to making choices, I suppose it's really important to make the right choices. And we're talking about probably a couple of different things. And one of them is choosing native plants that will thrive here. I mean, that are native to this area. And does that vary widely?
That is an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, a plant that would be native to California is not likely to do here well here at all, because the native plants that are local to us are adapted to our weather. Of course, the weather is changing a little bit, but still, they're mostly adapted. They're adapted to the soils, the winters, this year was good for plants in that there was a lot of snow cover for quite a while, which is protective for the plant's roots and so forth. So yes, native plants do better. They're easier to grow too if you get the local native plants. And that's a very good point. And we try to get the most local points. We have a lot of good native plant nurseries. I don't recommend getting like the sort of the native plant, what they call native plant mixes, say at a big box store, because a lot of those have native plants from all different parts of America and they won't do well here. And usually they're very beautiful for 1 year or so and then they peter out because they're not not long lasting and they're not adapted to our climate. So that's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. And our native plant nurseries, we have Agricol here. That's an excellent one, Prairie Nursery. You can actually find native nurseries at a DNR site. If you go to DNR and say native plant nurseries, it'll come up and they have nurseries for each county. And you can find one that has plants right as close to you as possible. So that's an excellent way to find the best native plants.
We're speaking with Mariette Nowak today on the morning show. Nan Calvert has invited her to the program. Mariette Nowak is the author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. So when one decides that you want to put in some native plants, is it largely the same process as if you were going to plant tulips or plant lilacs or plant, something else? Is it largely the same process? Are you preparing the soil in the same way? And are you nurturing it in the same way that one nurtures what we think of as more of kind of a standard garden that doesn't include native plants?
Yes, that's good to talk about. There are several ways you should prepare. The best thing is a kind of a clear slate without no other plants. That's usually the best way to start a native plant garden. And that would mean there are several ways to do it. You could cover up that land with cardboard and wood chips for a season. That takes a long time. And I've done that, but in the backyard, because when I was in the Milwaukee area, because you want to maybe look a little nicer, but anyway, it's not too bad if you put a lot of wood chips. That can look fairly fairly good to neighbors. But at any rate, then you or you could spray it with something like an herbicide that won't kill a lot of things. And so sometimes Roundup is recommended, and although there's a lot of bad publicity about it, it doesn't last very long, only a few weeks in the soil, and it's a one-time thing. It's not like you're using herbicides all the time. Or you could dig it up, there are pros and cons to that too. You could dig out all the other plants and then you'd have a clear slate there, but sometimes you would ruin the soil a little bit. You'll disturb the wonderful organisms that are so important to plants that are in the soil. So there's pros and cons to each of those methods, but that's usually recommended to have bare soil and then to plant in your plants. And then of course you should plant plants, even native plants need to be planted in the habitat that they can thrive in. If you have a wetland plant, you want to have a really moist soil. If you have a dry loving plant, you might, you could have a prairie. Some prairies are wetland prairie, more moist prairies too. And shade or sun, you need to think of that. So in my book, I have all those cultural needs of different species listed. And then, you know, you could actually have a garden for birds in general, or in my book, I have about 9 different gardens for specific birds. For example, you could have a hummingbird garden, and then I list all the plants for a hummingbird garden. Or you could have, you know, a prairie or a savanna bluebird garden. Prairies have specific plants in a very small native garden, native prairie. You might have goldfinches, for example, which are beautiful. And wetland gardens, you might have more of the, you know, wet-loving species. Some of our warblers even like wetter areas and shrubby areas. So there's all, and we're talking, you know, since it's migration time, I also have a chapter on the migratory bird garden. So you might want to think of that. So there's a lot of different possibilities, and we have wonderful native plants, and they're really easily available in Wisconsin, better than some places. So I highly recommend them, and you'll, as they say, plant it and they'll come.
And generally speaking, I suppose if you are making good choices, then they're apt to do very, very well. I mean,
that's a good question. That's a good point too. They're usually easier to care for, but the first year you should water them regularly, like every week. And sometimes, you know, we've had crazy weather lately. So you might have to even water a bit other times of year if we have a terrible drought. So there are, you know, they do need a little care till they're really set. And usually that's the first year, especially. So, and it's good to kind of mulch around them a little bit, but not too close, but mulch to keep other weeds down after you plant them.
How expensive are native plants? I mean, are we talking about a significant investment compared to buying more commonly used plants and flowers?
That's a good question. Sometimes they are a little more expensive. However, oftentimes you can get discounts by, for example, for wild ones, we have a special arrangement with AgriCall, our particular chapter, and we get very small plants, but at a wonderful price, you know, much lower than if you'd get them as an individual. So if you join a wild ones group, you probably will have the best prices for the plants. Also, a nursery in the Milwaukee area, Johnson's Nursery, gives a discount to Wild Ones members when they go and can prove their membership. So those are some of the ways to save money. I'm not sure about other sales. Those are the two that I know about, but you could try to see if there are other sales that are available. Sometimes there is even sharing of plants with different gardening or wild ones groups, that they bring plants to share with other members, and seeds too. We many groups, and we've had that before COVID. We had a seed sharing once a year.
I suspect that some people who've never dealt with native plants are maybe thinking in the back of their mind that if you decide to use native plants, then you're making some kind of concession in terms of how attractive the garden is going to be. And I suspect that you're going to want to speak against that native plants can be every bit as beautiful as the things we more commonly see in gardens.
Yes, you're right. I think they're absolutely beautiful. And you have to remember, though, that a lot of our native plants have special growing periods. So woodland plants, native plants are usually most beautiful in the spring. They're coming. I have some wonderful hepatica and bloodroot coming up in my yard right now. And later in the summer, the other parts of my yard are more beautiful. And so, you know, it depends on the stage. A lot of our plants don't blossom all year long. But you can have something blossoming all year long if you plant some that do well in spring, some in summer, some in fall. You can have wonderful plants all through the growing season.
Where do you suggest, when it comes specifically to planting native plants for the purpose of attracting birds, should they be located in particular places in one's yard, or does that not matter too much?
I don't think that matters too much, except that you might have different kinds of conditions in your different parts of your yard. For example, I have a woodland that has more moist soil, but the rest of my area is like some of the Kettle Moraine is really very dry and a lot of gravel in the, you know, gravel in the soil and so forth. So I don't have the greatest soil, but native plants are wonderful. The prairie plants do wonderful in that kind of dry, gravelly soil, as long as they're not the kind that need more moisture. So yeah, I have several different kinds of habitats, and then I have some wet areas also. So yeah, it depends on what your yard is like. A lot of times there's a drainage area in the back. When I lived in the suburb, I lived in Greendale before, it was more moist towards the back because they, you know, they're draining some of the water away from the houses. And also the sump pump that we had, the drainage, we created a little rain garden from the sump pump area for with the water that came from the sump pump. So use all the water that you have on your property and just plant the best plants for those areas.
We're speaking with Mariette Nowak, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. And her advice, of course, is that if you are interested in seeing beautiful birds in your own backyard, and who isn't, that one of the best things you can do is to plant native plants. And this will be one of the very, very best ways in order to do this. Mariette Nowak, is your advice... Does your advice about this have anything to do with whether or not people have bird feeders? In other words, if one is choosing to attract birds with your native plants, does it make sense then to not have bird feeders, or is that not particularly pertinent?
I have both. I have, of course, a lot of native plants, and I have feeders because I like to bring them close and see them. And of course, at this time of year, you know, there's not as much in spring here. There's not as much food for birds because the seeds have either been eaten gone into the soils already, and the berries are gone, most of them. So I especially think feeding at this time of year is good, and through the winter too. And it's just fun to see the birds and bring them close to your home. And of course, sometimes you'll get birds that you don't see that often. But the main thing, though, is to have the native habitat, and that can supplement your feeders. And then I reduce the feeding in the summertime because there's... But talking about feeding birds, the first hummingbird was seen in Wisconsin on Monday in Broadhead. So most of, you know, that's only at one. Usually we say put up the feeders, the hummingbird feeders in May. But boy, this is such an early spring. You might want to consider putting it up sooner. So usually I think of May 1st, but here it is April 7th, and the first hummingbird has been seen.
Wow.
So yeah, if you do put them up, though, clean them like twice a week. And if you don't have the time to do that, it's better to plant hummingbird flowers, birds that provide that nectar. And native plants, by the way, generally have much more nectar for hummingbirds than non-native plants. So it's real important to plant those.
And it's such a treat whenever one sees a hummingbird in your backyard.
Yeah, it's just the most
special
sure.
sort of thing. That's great.
Right.
In our closing minutes, I want to give you a chance to talk about something that is also important to think about at this time of year. There's a couple different times of years when we're talking about birds migrating. And this makes things, of course, especially interesting. And once in a while, we even have sort of visitors that are sort of passing through on their way from one place to another. So what birds right now are migrating, and in particular, what birds are migrating through Wisconsin or migrating to Wisconsin?
Well, I talked about the hummingbird, but also on Easter, it was a treat for me in my yard. I saw a couple yellow-rumped warblers, the first warblers of the year to pass. They do not nest here. They go further north, but I think they went further north already because I haven't seen them since, but a little later we'll get a lot of them, and they'll stay for a little while. They need to feed a lot on their way so that they have enough energy for their migration. I also saw the first sapsucker on Easter. That is a woodpecker that likes to peck on trees and feed on the sap of the trees. So that I saw one of those on Easter, but then again, that one seems to have passed, but I suspect I'll see more that are migrating through. And of course, we've had cranes. Sandhill cranes have been very active. And just a little earlier than that, lots of robins and blackbirds. And now the ducks are getting more abundant. Around my neighborhood, I have some lakes, and I have had mallards, wood ducks, and blue-winged teal. And I've also seen tree swallows, which I love, and I hope they will nest in my yard. They usually nest here, so I'm hoping that I'll get them this year also. So those are some of the early birds, and we're going to get a lot more coming in. A lot of the warblers are usually on their way up north. They won't stay here, but we have some that do nest in our area, and mostly in more natural areas, not in your backyard necessarily, unless you have a large property. But those are some of the best ones coming in. And it's so important to have our birds. I don't know if all of your listeners know that we've lost a staggering amount of birds since the 1970s. 3 billion birds fewer grace our land today. And that was just published in 2019, a big study that found that there was so much decline of birds. So everything we can do for birds is so important. We should protect our windows because millions of birds are killed by flying into our windows. And I have either decals or netting across my windows. And keep your cats indoors. 2.4 billion birds, a median of that number, sometimes people think there might be more, are killed each year. So those are some of the ways to protect the birds that are migrating through and that might feed and nest in your yard.
Right. Feed your cats yourself. Don't leave them to feed on the beautiful birds that we need to have. And of course, it's not just because they're beautiful to look at, but because they are part of an intricate ecosystem. And when we lose birds, then potentially other parts of the ecosystem are disrupted. I think it must be a special joy for you to, if I understand correctly, you live in a different place now than you once did.
Yeah, I live in a rural area near East Troy, Wisconsin, and it's kind of in the middle of the southern Kettle Moraine area, and it is very nice out here, yeah.
Right.
I lived in Greendale before that, but I only had a fourth-acre property, so when we retired, we retired out here, my husband and I.
So this is paradise for you, and especially when it comes to being able to see beautiful birds and other beautiful creatures all around you. I'm so glad that we're having this conversation during National Wildlife Week. It just could not be more timely. And we want to encourage people to seek out your book, Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. And what is the other book that you have written?
This was in 1980. It was called Eve's Rib. And this was before I became director, when I had more, I didn't have time while I was director to write a book. But that one was about the female of the species, you know, the wildlife species and so forth, and even some plants, and how special, all the special things about the female of different plants and animals.
Wonderful. And we do want to remind everybody that all over the state of Wisconsin are chapters for the Wild Ones. And that's such a worthwhile organization if you care about most of what we've been talking about today, and in particular the beauty of native plants and the importance of expunging invasives from the landscape. Being active in a group like Wild Ones is especially important. Mariette Nowak, I am so glad that Nan Calvert issued this invitation to you, and I'm so glad that we could have this conversation. Thank you for all the good work that you are doing on behalf of birds and native plants, and we wish you a happy yet busy retirement, and I thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
Well, thanks so much, Greg. It was a pleasure to be here.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and now I'm really happy that we can finish out the hour
with Nan Calvert, who, of course, helped to arrange the conversation you just heard with Mariette Nowak, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, a guide to gardening with native plants to attract birds. And Nan Calvert, I know you've had a chance to listen to the interview with Mariette Nowak, and let's just start with your general impressions of where that conversation went and what she had to say.
Well, Mariette has always been wonderful in terms of native plants and birds and their dependence on one another. She's always been a great educator, and I'm so glad to hear that she's written another book. And I would encourage people to either go to the library and check out Birdscaping in the Midwest, or even better, purchase that book and have it at hand, because it's a fabulous resource.
So one of the things that I think would be helpful for us to explore in the next few minutes is to maybe give people who live in kind of suburban America, and I would count myself among them, maybe a clearer idea of sort of how this would work or what this would look like. I mean, it's one thing when one lives, in a sense, kind of out in the country on an acreage, the way you do, for instance, versus uh-huh. somebody who lives on more of a leave it to Beaver Street. So first of all, how have you seen this kind of thing play out in real neighborhoods in cities and towns?
Oh, over and over again, people are able to transform their, what we would think of as a traditional or usual landscape, into something that is supportive and attractive to our native birds. And it's important to keep in mind the absolute drastic decline of our native migratory birds in a relatively short period of time. And a good deal of that is because of loss of habitat. And so when I say habitat, it means specifically, now we're talking about birds, they need a place to nest and rest and feed and breed. And our typical suburban landscape is rather barren, actually, in terms of those necessities. But it's easy to make it much more hospitable for native birds. So one of the things we always encourage people to do, and I'll say this over and over again, is please keep cats indoors. They are extremely problematic for birds. They're an introduced predator. Even though cats are domesticated, that hunting instinct never really got terribly tamped down. And so when they're allowed to wander, they do a great deal of destruction on our native bird populations, but also our native small mammal populations. I've seen cats catch monarch butterflies. So please keep your cats indoors. It's also much better for the cats because of certain really terrible diseases they're prone to and that are actually pandemic now in the outdoor cat populations. So, you know, to be a good and kind cat owner, please keep your cats indoors. Then let's have plants that our native insects need to survive, our native pollinators and other insects, because our bird populations need those plants. Keep in mind that Mariette said more than 90% of our birds feed their babies insects. So for example, of course, everybody, including myself, wants to attract hummingbirds because they're just miraculous. Adult hummingbirds primarily feed on nectar. But their babies need protein, their babies need insects. And if we don't have those kinds of plants in relative abundance, it's the adult birds have to work so much harder to feed their babies. Mm. Then, of course, our native plants produce nectar in higher quality and higher quantity than non-native plants. So right now, if we walk around, we see in most yards, or many yards anyway, we see daffodils and we see scilla and we see snowdrops, and they're all very beautiful, but they're not particularly quality in terms of what early emerging insects need. And then again, our migratory birds that are coming back this way have expended an enormous amount of energy in their migratory route, and they need protein to replenish their stores. and go on to lay eggs and procreate for the next generation. So even though those plants are beautiful, what we need to do is make room for our native spring ephemerals. And so, for example, in my front yard, right now the bloodroot is in full bloom. Spring beauties are in full bloom. The Virginia bluebells, the bright, beautiful green leaves are up, and soon they'll produce flowers. And these are timed perfectly for our emerging insects. And on a warm, sunny day, if you would walk outside when all of the flowers are open, you would see myriad small insects flying around, nectaring close to the ground. And it's a really cool, if you will, circle of life thing to witness.
Mm.
So there are other things we can do besides those kind of small, herbaceous flowering plants. Southeastern Wisconsin is home to a number of beautiful berry-producing shrubs. And a number of these shrubs actually have really gorgeous color in the fall. So, you know, beautiful burgundy and wine and red on their leaves in the fall. So you get lots of interest for those three seasons. And they're actually pretty easy to source nowadays. In the early days, a lot of us relied on American highbush cranberry. It's an easy shrub to grow. Unfortunately, the berries it produces aren't particularly desirable to birds. Robins will eat them because kind of, you know, it's the only thing out there. But there are other things in service berries and viburnums, and there's a whole host of things. We have gooseberries and wild currants, and oh, there's just so many wonderful things that produce fruits that actually we can eat as well as the birds, and certainly, you know, squirrels and chipmunks and other things enjoy them too, but really beneficial. And of course they flower, so they provide nectar for those things that need nectar. We can make a space in our yard. If you have a nice, bright, sunny space in your yard, you can put in some prairie plants. And perhaps you don't have a lot of room, and for all of us, of course, these days, you know, budget is a concern. But there are some plants in the Silphium family that do pretty well in an urban landscape, and one of them is called rosinweed. And it's not a weed. Don't worry about the common names. It's a native plant. And the really cool thing about these plants is that they produce lots of seeds in the fall time. That's so important for the birds who are going to migrate out of Wisconsin for the winter and go elsewhere where it's a little bit warmer and there are still insects available. And those seeds are highly nutritious. So rosinweed would be a good thing to consider. And of course, you know, all of the milkweeds are especially good because certainly hummingbirds will nectar on milkweeds. And then because, of course, they support monarch butterflies. But the cool thing about native plants is they support our native insect population. Our native insect population is the basis of the food chain. It's what holds everything together. So the more beneficial insects we have around, the better off everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
Hand in hand with that, we strongly encourage people not to use pesticides. You don't need to put pesticides on your lawn to kill the things that are in the soil that might be emerging as an insect. Those are beneficial, and the soil is supposed to have those things in there. Yes, mosquitoes are a horrible thing in Wisconsin in the summer. They're dreadful. They truly are. But there are other things that we can do to control insects, control mosquitoes. And, you know, of course, our native bird populations and our amphibian populations eat those insects as well. One thing that's really interesting, you know, cardinals are so beautiful, and we notice them, especially in the wintertime with the male cardinals' bright red plumage. Cardinals like brush piles. They like the male and the female cardinals. It's very attractive to them, and they make nests in there. And, of course, it provides a place to get away from predators. So if you have a place in your landscape where you can create a brush pile, you might notice eventually that the cardinals will find it, and you'll see the male and female cardinals in there. You might even get to see them feeding their babies.
Can you describe more what you mean by a brush pile? What exactly are you talking about there?
You know, In our traditional suburban landscape, we keep everything pretty sterile. So we get rid of leaves in the fall, and then we get rid of twigs when twigs fall down and branches and that sort of thing. But if you can find a place, it'll probably be in your backyard where nobody notices. Twigs and branches, pile them up in a sort of mound. At least sort of somewhere between knee and hip height, if you will. And make certain that there are spaces that the birds can fly into to get into that brush pile. And it provides great cover for predators and a place for cardinals to nest and rest and feed and breed. And it's also pretty good cover for rabbits. And I know a lot of people are, they get cranky when they have too many cottontails because the cottontails eat whatever vegetation they've put in. But those cottontails provide food for our native predators like hawks and owls and other things. So it all goes together. It's all connected. I encourage people to think of native plants as the intercessor between earth and sky. So they connect what's in the sky down to the earth. And so that includes our birds as well.
Hmm. We have Nan Calvert with us for this portion of the morning show. So Nan, you rattled off quite an impressive list of native plants that would really work well for the purposes that you've just outlined. What would be some of the most accessible sources to which people might turn in order to find some of these native plants and to maybe make the right choices for what's going to work especially well for them in their particular place?
First, go and get Marriott's book, Birdscaping in the Midwest. And then one of the really cool things about Wisconsin is that we have a whole host of native plant nurseries all over the state that propagate native plants. Unfortunately, we don't have any that are close here in Racine or Kenosha, but the beauty of it is that many of the nurseries will deliver. And we have a list of nurseries on the Root Pike Watershed Initiative website that are highly reputable and really wonderful to work with. Wild Ones chapters, pretty much all of the Wild Ones chapters in our state have native plant sales. Those are very good to go to because they have an excellent selection of native plants. They have people around who can help you pick the right plant for the right place in your yard. And it supports Wild Ones, which is a wonderful group, as Marriott said. If you'd like a list or you have questions, you can certainly email me at nan@rootpikewin.org.
Does it make sense to for someone who just can't give up their daffodils or whatever, but would like to introduce this into the mix as well? Does it make sense to keep native plants separate, very distinct from other things that one might be cultivating in one's garden or in one's yard, or to intermix them? Would that be okay?
I never encourage people to intermix them simply because bulbs are non-native and they tend to be prolific. And non-native plants generally come up earlier and persist longer than our native plants. Those non-native plants don't have the same constraints on them that our native plants do. So tulips and daffodils and scilla and snowdrops came from another country. And they don't have the checks and balances on them that our native plants do. So you can have all of those lovely spring blooming bulbs, but you can also have native plants, but just find a separate area for both of those.
In other words,
Yeah.
So the tulips and so on are apt to really overrun the native plants. And so
So they're taking up nutrients and water and space and light that our native plants need.
Hmm. When one plants native plants, is the act of sort of nurturing them, caring for them, different from what you do when you're growing tulips or daffodils or whatever? I mean, is the care for native plants significantly different?
It is. It's significantly different. So native landscaping is a whole different approach and a whole different philosophy than conventional or horticultural landscaping. So, you know, it comes a point in a traditional landscape where you have lots of spring blooming bulbs that people dig and divide because they have so many of them. And so they give them away or they plant them elsewhere. You know, they're reproducing quickly and prolifically, and they're sort of, you know, growing themselves out of house and home. With native plants, you never have to do that unless for some reason you want to share something with someone. Perhaps someone is just starting on their native landscape and you want to share some of your plants. You can certainly do that, and that happens all of the time in Wild Ones chapters. You don't fertilize native plants, and in fact, research shows that if you put fertilizer down in a native plant area, it negatively impacts the root system of native plants. And of course, the root system is the powerhouse of native plants. It's what controls erosion and, you know, enhances the water cycle and enhances the soil cycle. You want those roots to be as vigorous and robust as possible. And you don't spray them for insects and you know, once your native landscape is established, you don't water them. If it's droughty at some point in time and they don't care for that so much, they'll just senesce or die back, but then they'll come back the next year. Whereas in our traditional landscapes, when it gets hot and dry, you know, people are watering their lawns and watering their flower beds, and it comes at a pretty high cost, actually, in terms of water conservation. You know, yes, water your flower beds, those are so beautiful, but watering lawns, we have to rethink our approach to lawns. And in fact, you know, you can replace traditional turf grass with native grasses. And so, you know, it has a much lower impact, a much smaller footprint than our traditional turf grasses. You know, you can, if the only thing that, what I always tell people is, if the only thing you can do is perhaps plant a tree, plant an oak tree. Again, oak trees, our native oak species, support over 500 different species of insects. And what do our native birds, the vast majority of them, need? Especially in the springtime, they need insects. And of course, oaks are so beautiful. And yeah, there are so many species, native species, that you can pick from, like bur oaks and red oaks and all kinds of oaks. So, you know, there are so many options for people who want to do native landscaping. Mm.
And again, you mentioned a website to which people can turn to get kind of a list of different providers. Was that Root Pike Winds website, did you say?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what is that website?
Go right to our website. And if you have any questions, you can always give me a shout or send me an email. It's rootpikewind.org.
Very good. Nan Calvert, I'm so glad that we could fold your helpful comments into today's discussion about all of the good reasons to do native landscaping for the sake of attracting beautiful birds and much, much more. And we do want to say one more time, Mariette Nowak's wonderful book is called Birdscaping in the Midwest, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Thank you, Nan Calvert. We look forward to seeing you in May.
Thank you, Greg. I'll see you in May.
Tomorrow on the podcast version of The Morning Show, a really interesting conversation I recorded and broadcast way back in the early 2000s on vegetarianism. with George Eisman, author of The Most Noble Diet, Food Selection and Ethics. The occasion of our conversation was a visit which he paid to the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. You can subscribe to The Morning Show podcast by looking for The Morning Show with Greg Berg on Spotify, Google Podcasts.